Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to another edition of Stalking Time for the Moon Boys with me, David Baddiel.
And me, Tim Hinks.
That's the best we've ever
done.
Yeah,
that was good, right?
I had to hit you to get you to do it because you were texting. Yeah. But nonetheless, yeah. I think that's the smoothest we've ever done.
Yeah.
And we're still with John O'Farrell.
Welcome back.
Welcome back. A long, long week it's been. This is a constant gag, of course.
No, I mean,
we like to do, pretend we've been here for a
week. And
then
there's a sort of joke about we've been sitting in the shed.
Sometimes
here
we talk about, sometimes
week,
we do that.
Doing nothing, staring
sometimes
at each other.
Sometimes we pretend that we've gone away for a week or whatever. But no, we're just still here with John O'Farrell. But it's a week later you're listening to this.
Tell them who I am, Deb, because they won't know.
They will, because we've got a dedicated, very small core of listeners. But yes, John O'Farrell, the writer, the comedy writer, the novelist, and most recently, actually, I don't know if I mentioned this, did I, in the last one, he wrote the book of a Broadway musical.
Indeed.
Something Rotten, and you're writing another one now. Am I allowed to mention that?
You can. We're doing Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah.
Wow. Mrs. Doubtfire, the musical. Amazing. Yeah, it's going to be on Broadway this time next year, I hope.
That's absolutely brilliant, actually. I'm very much looking forward to it. I saw Something Rotten on Broadway. It's very, very good.
Thank you, David.
I read the Joe Orton Diaries, and one of the things I've always remembered, apart from lots of sexual activity, is that when Loot was in the West End, and you maybe both you've done this sort of thing, he would get the number 19 bus from Islington and just sort of go down to the theatre and see it and then sort of go back home.
I know, it's great.
And I did that
I'd go for dinner with friends and then think, oh, it'll just be coming up to the big number of Act 2. I'll just go and stand at the back of the theatre. We used to get a standing ovation sometimes. And I'd just go and see that number and see the standing ovation for that song and think, this is living.
That's so nice.
I had my own show in the West End.
That's why I asked.
Did you go to that?
I did go to that. I did turn up to that. But also I did occasionally... I didn't make a special journey, but it was when I was at the Vaudeville Theatre, particularly, because that's on the Strand, I would think, oh, I might just, you know, definitely walk past that big placard with me on it. Because that's a thing.
Because I've not done it, that do occasionally go into the back of other people's musicals and stand there, just to see what that feels like. But to be honest, it's awkward.
The security throw you out.
The security don't let me in, to be honest. I don't even get there.
You told the story... Just tell it again for the listeners, because we liked it, and it's to do with music, which is enough, really, to get it on this podcast.
We were talking about Ed Miliband, and about at a certain point in time, amazingly, he was Labour leader.
I remember.
I don't know why I said amazingly. That's unnecessary editorial, isn't it? He was Labour leader.
Slightly extraordinary, because everyone expected David, of course, not your cat. Ed to be
David Bowie.
Anyone really, apart from Ed.
It's always an interesting phenomenon, the Miliband thing. I'm treading carefully here because we're entirely politically neutral, but I always felt that's quite an interesting phenomenon that Ed was the leader, and so everyone said, yeah, of course they got the wrong one, it should be David. But standing back, I don't think they're both ideal.
No, I think, and also you don't factor in all the things that might have gone wrong under David, you know, the mistakes he might have made.
Yeah, and they were both in their own ways, felt to me slightly out of touch, you know, just slightly sort of a bit nerdy, I mean, so I think that's quite an interesting thing in life where sometimes you can say, it's a bit like the humble brag thing, which I notice that friends might do about children, which is instead of saying, I'm going to get to the story, but instead of saying...
Not as much as the listeners, I can tell you.
What, you think that's still worse? Instead of saying, my kid is really good at maths, because people are a bit cleverer than that now, right, so they don't want to break, they'll sort of say, oh, this kid, oh, he's useless. He's not like his brother, who's brilliant. You know, he's rubbish at maths.
Right. Like,
by implication, the other one is brilliant.
And they'll create a thing whereby that child, who they've slagged off, goes on to have a hollow feeling about themselves.
I'm assuming,
and either commit suicide or ends up like David Bowie.
is exactly what I'm getting at.
Yeah, well, I see that's what.
But let's return to the story.
Yeah, so the story involves.
I was invited to an Ed. I'm going to say Diliband because that's what I said. So I'm going to commit to it like a politician as if I made a mistake.
Yeah.
Ed Diliband's fundraiser.
What a great band they were. The Ed Diliband.
I quite like saying that. It's a fundraiser for Ed Diliband, and he the various people there, and of course he ends up talking to everyone because he thinks, "Are you going to give me money or not?" Yeah. So he's talking to me. And this is sort of, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago. And he's trying to say, which I sort of agreed with, the world is in a terrible state now. Poverty's never been as great. You know, opportunities
for
young...
If only he knew.
Yeah, exactly. Opportunities for young people. And he said, I'll give you an example. He said, I was talking the other day to the cousin of Heather Small. That's from incredible. M People.
Did you immediately recognise who that was?
Yeah, because he said... Because I think I said, M People, as if I don't know what else to say.
Yeah.
I was talking to her cousin.
Did Ed Miliband say, I'm one of them, because his name is Ed Miliband? I know that's the worst joke I've ever made.
It's not the worst.
not by a long way, David.
That's actually one of the better ones. And he said, I was talking to her cousin, I'm sort of thinking, is this, I don't know where this is leading, and it turns out it's leading precisely here, which is, he says, I was talking to her and she has just left university and she was telling me she thinks it's a very bleak future. She doesn't know what she's going to do. And he said to me, as if the point needed making, if Heather Small's cousin is feeling like that, imagine what it's like for everyone else. And I'm thinking lots of things, but I'm also thinking, trying to calculate in my mind, I wonder where Heather Smalls, who's wrote some brilliant songs, where she is in the pecking order of things, because she doesn't strike me as someone who would have all her money in the Cayman Islands. You know, in other words, she's not a big figure financially. And so her cousin, who presumably wouldn't see any of that money anyway.
I suppose she's got connections. Maybe she could get a job in a music studio.
Yes,
or
but
something.
The sentence is a strange one. I mean, it's a strange name drop anyway. Heather Small's cousin. I was talking to Heather Small's cousin.
Yeah.
But also, if Heather Small's cousin. You know, has got like no real prospects ahead of her.
Mm.
What's it going to be like for everyone else? You want to think, say, well, she is everyone else.
Yes,
that's who she is. Everyone else.
And you sort of say, what about her sister? Because that'd be nearer, wouldn't it?
Her sister.
Didn't meet her.
But what would it be like if you said Heather Smalls feels the world? Wouldn't have that much of an impact.
That wouldn't really work because Heather Smalls presumably still does get some revenue from whatever you've done today to make you feel proud.
Probably from Miranda.
And from you doing that.
She's one of the M People as well.
Yeah.
I had to write a gag for M People once. It was Euro 96. No, not for them.
All right.
It was Euro 96, which you might remember, David.
I remember Euro 96.
And I was up at Old Trafford and there was a massive concert for the football. And I was writing Nick Hancock's gags for the TV show connected with it. And I was on the stage.
Think it's all over.
Was that what it's called?
No.
He was, because of They Think It's All Over, he was introducing this comedy and music extravaganza for the opening of Euro 96. And I was on the stage in the wings watching all these amazing bands. And John Thompson from Cold Feet says to me, John, give me a line to introduce M People. I went, I've got to do it now. I went, okay. Ladies and gentlemen, I listened to a band, they crossed their name between Boney M and Village People, ladies and gentlemen, Boney Village. Which is
On the spot, that's brilliant.
He went out and did it. And they're all like, woo, woo, woo. And he goes, ladies and gentlemen, Boney Village. Tumbleweed. 100,000 people. I'm not kidding you. Old Trafford with all the pitch occupied as well. Just, what the fuck are you talking about? Boney Village? M People, you idiot. Massive M People fans about to cheer M People. Yeah. Boney Village? Nothing. He comes on and goes, thanks a lot, John. Thanks a lot. That died on its
own. I'll be honest with you, I'm not sure, having done a sort of bit myself, that stadium comedy really works anyway.
No.
You know, and actually... One of the things I noticed about Bohemian Rhapsody, the film, is there's a weird... Well, I think that's a strange film anyway, just to make one little point, which actually helps what I'm trying to say, I think, which is the end of Bohemian Rhapsody. Have you seen Bohemian Rhapsody?
Yeah.
Have you seen it?
Yes, I have.
Okay, so the end of Bohemian Rhapsody I find very odd, because it's quite a good biopic, and it's a good performance from him, but the last 20 minutes is a shot-for-shot recreation of Live Aid, of three songs from Live Aid from Queen. And by that time, by 20 minutes in, I'm just thinking... I can watch this on YouTube, or worse, I can watch a tribute band doing their recreation of Live Aid, which is what this is.
But you're in a cinema with a sound, and you've had the narrative take you up to there.
You may have noticed this, is they're backstage in Bohemian Rhapsody, and you can just about hear two blokes playing Mel and Griff, who introduced
Queen. Is that right?
You could just about hear them doing their terrible intro. That's right, which I remember. I remember their terrible intro, which
in 85,
is
85. I wouldn't be right for them then.
Which is they're on stage at Live Aid and they go. I can't remember exactly what it is, but it's something like, oh, do you know who's coming on next? No, it's not. It's not, is it? Yes, Your Majesty.
Wow. And they do same a gag, basically. Wow. Same rubbish gag.
I think it's a worse gag.
No, I think that's... By the way, there's another M People connection, is that a friend of mine was a session guitarist and was asked to play with them, and they played a stadium. They something like Coventry Football Club or Leicester, or maybe it was Leicester, so he played at the football stadium. And he, it was summer, I think, he needed to borrow some shorts.
Right.
So he borrowed my shorts.
Yes.
And so my shorts, and I don't know if I've still got them, I was quite obsessed about them. My shorts were on stage in front of, 30,000. How many would you get? No, maybe not. Anyway, 15,000 people.
They'd be on the pitch as well.
On stage with M People.
Wow, it's quite a thing.
That's
almost like speaking to Heather Small's cousin.
He's wearing these shorts now, listeners.
And if he feels grim about the future, what does that tell you about the other youth of today? Although he's in his late 50s now.
We've managed not to mention David Bowie. I think very briefly he turned up. But we've managed more or less not to mention him.
No, we haven't really mentioned him.
Is there anything about him that we haven't covered?
Well, I think there is one thing, which is that I, just going back to that documentary, which is now two weeks ago now,
Finding Fame.
Two things about it. One, I felt a bit upset because I quite like to think that early period, I really like those early recordings, and I like the Duran
Brothers. And all that stuff.
Yeah, I love Images and Duran. Okay. And I don't know, maybe because it was like I was listening to them when I was 14, 15.
I started to like them much more.
Really?
Right.
I tell you, if you listen to Bowie at the Beeb, the versions that he was doing in like 1969 of songs like Let Me Sleep Beside You and In the Heat of the Morning are absolutely
true.
Yeah, the BBC tape, I can't remember what they are. They're tapes. What am I saying, tapes? Or
well, they
the
are
BBC,
tapes.
They're on,
yeah,
no, but they're
they
on
are
Spotify.
Tapes.
On Spotify.
That'd be
wise. You have to buy tapes.
No, they were once tapes.
Yeah, you have to buy the TDK of them, whatever it was. And I suppose I, at 14, 15, I suppose it was, I'd never heard anything quite like that because they were sort of these weird songs about children, songs about paedophiles, of course, in the case of...
There's a sort of genre of weird 60s rock because Arnold Lane is really about a paedophile or a bloke who steals knickers from Washington.
Little Bombardier is the paedophile one.
Is Little Bombardier right? Yeah,
yeah, about really?
Can anyone name another one?
What? Paedophile song?
A paedophile song.
A not by Bowie.
Now that's
not by Bowie, but from the same kind of era. From the same kind of era. I don't know. You may not know it.
Is there a Who song that's a bit in this?
Well, I think there is. There is a Who song in Tommy. There's Fiddle About. Fiddle About. Good point. God, we might have done a whole album.
We are doing a great compilation here.
Aqualung.
The kids are not right.
It's Aqualung by Jethro Tull.
Yes. Now I think
watching the pretty girls run. It's incredible. It's totally about and kind of affectionate.
Yeah.
Do you think the male are going to like this in the culture wars thing? They're going to go.
That's a good point.
Terry Wogan or paedophiles?
I don't think we're approving of it.
It'd be Bowie versus paedophiles, wouldn't it? And it would be so let's all work out how much we hate Bowie.
Yeah. But anyway, yes, there was a strange.
But then there were the unconscious. Oh, I don't know about unconscious. But then there were the straightforward paedophile songs. Like Sweet Little 16. Hello Little Schoolgirl. Was it Hello Little Schoolgirl?
Yes. And there's a big star do a really weird song called
13.
September Girls or something like that.
Oh, is that okay? Yeah. And then you got the Rolling Stones.
13.
Yeah,
Rolling Stones.
Straight Cat Blues.
Oh my God.
Yeah, I know. She's 13 years old.
And
what they think. But then there's a line on that same album. Get Your Yayas Out.
Okay.
It's a great album, actually. But there's I listen to the Midnight Ramblers. I listen to that album a lot still, actually.
It was a different
Midnight
time.
It was a different time. But he says, I'm a hit and run rapist. And you go, blimey. So you've got a 13 year old girl on one song. Next song, you're a hit and run rapist.
And apparently, with Stray Cat Blues, as they performed it live over the years, the age would go up.
Oh, really?
And obviously, they don't perform it now at all.
Tim, but.
Yeah.
One thing I noticed when I was watching that Finding Fame thing about those early songs is that I think a lot of them do get really brilliant towards the time he's finding his voice. But I said to my daughter, who, as you know, is a massive Bowie fan, I said, it's weird, isn't it, how at one point he was virtually doing creepy children's songs.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the Laughing Gnome and Bombardier, whatever it's called.
Little Bombardier is
yeah, and a few others. There's a few others. There's one that they play, which are just like, you know, the way that children's songs can be a bit creepy.
Yeah, Mini Poppy. I'm sure you've told this on the referred to this before on your podcast, but because I haven't listened to all of them. But do you remember when he said, "Vote for the favorite Bowie song"?
Vote for Laughing Gnome. Voted.
And the Daily,
it was an early Boating Book Boat Face.
It was. The enemy said, "Vote for Laughing Gnome," and everyone started voting for Laughing Gnome. Yes. And I think it won, but he didn't do it.
He refused to play it. Yeah. Yeah. Which was kind of weird. He could have done a version of it, because it's not a terrible song. Oh. I mean, part of the problem is Gus Dudgeon, I think, was dead by then. He was, of course, the gnome.
Yeah,
I don't know if Gus was dead or not, but you're talking about that was the Glass Spider tour.
It was quite late. Yeah,
was the Glass Spider tour. When did he do that thing of phone?
I thought it was later than that.
It was later. Gus Dudgeon was probably dead.
But I think. But I think he could have done any one of those songs later, as he did with London Boys on they showed the clip of Glastonbury. And you know, lyrically, they created real world. So I fell in love with all this. So a bit of me thought, this is the bit of Bowie that people don't really know about, and I'm really annoyed that it's on telly, because now people are going to see it. Right. You know that thing about ownership. This is all, ownership. Which of course is ridiculous. Yeah,
Jonathan Ross talked about that when he was on the podcast.
Completely ridiculous. But it's what
ownership. Tell me a bit more about what you're saying.
Well, in the sense that you have it's always this odd thing that I'm a big Beatles fan as well, as I'm sure that you have this personal connection with them, and you don't really want to be reminded everyone has.
Just in your defence, I think that when I've talked to David about Bowie, you know, after our football matches or whatever, I knew David was a proper Bowie fan. Mm. And when he died, I was a bit pissed off how everyone was a great Bowie fan. And I wanted to go, you weren't. You were not like me. You didn't always wear a David Bowie badge all through your teens and at university.
Right. No, that's true.
I called my dog David Bowie.
What we were saying in the last podcast about people going on about him being this great gender-bending costumed artist. Yeah. He's like, well, you're not getting it, because that's what everyone says.
So when I live a mile from Brixton, and everyone went down there that night and sang Starman, and I didn't want to go. I thought, no, they're hijacking this. And I walked to where he was born, which is about the half mile from my house to Stansfield Road. Did you? Yeah. I just walked down there. There were no flowers there or anything. I just thought, okay, this is where he's born. I've done my little personal private thing. But it's probably not a very laudable feeling that I had.
I
felt that David Bowie belonged to me and
that's
people like you two,
okay.
And not to the 15-year-old singing Starman outside the
museum.
That's fine. They're entitled to do that.
Said earlier on, I mean, it's not laudable in the sense that it's immature, but you said earlier on that when you were a teenager, you decided to build your identity around Bowie, and that's why you feel defensive about
it. Not physically. I am a
Bowie fan, just like you might think about a few other things at the time. I'm a Chelsea fan, or whatever it might be, but it becomes very integral to you.
Yes.
And then when you see lots of people co-opting it, you feel your identity slightly dissolved. Who is a massive Bowie fan, said he wouldn't go, and I sort of understood it, really, even though I liked it, to the Bowie exhibition at the V&A.
Right.
Because he just thought, ownership.
I never saw Spamalot, because I was such a Python fan.
Right.
Thought, I don't want other people doing this.
And
sketches.
Also kind of fair enough.
Right, I mean, right. Well, I should have seen it by now.
But I think I don't agree with Jonathan on it, because I felt that.
But also there was something, it wasn't just about Universal co-opting Bowie. It was also like, here's the establishment, the V&A. Taking hold of David Bowie. I think he didn't like that
But I mean, whereas I thought, God, you see so little of what he was, and how, I can't wait to go and see it, because it's, you know, because it may see things I've never seen before. But no, I felt watching it, I thought, well, this is, you know, I feel like I've got some sense of ownership over those
ownership
early,
I do as well.
You know, recordings, and I don't want it to be on BBC
but
Two.
Then I also feel slightly vindicated that the guy I picked to be the music I love the most is now widely held to be one of the most important artists. Because I was the only one in my class at school who really loved David Bowie. Yes. People were into punk, and people were into heavy metal, and Noel John's a Bowie fan. Yes. And that was me. Now everyone go, oh, I was massively into David Bowie, and I want to go, were you?
Yeah.
But there's an artist, so the other specific thing I felt watching it is they talk about Anthony Newley all the time. There's an artist that I think is so close to Bowie at that period, who also recorded a song I got slightly obsessed with when I was kid. Do you remember Junior Choice on Radio 1, right?
Yes, Edge Tupot.
Right, and there would be this genre, exactly. Yes, exactly.
that was Bowie.
Wasn't there a voice going, hello, darling? Do you remember
possibly.
That? There was a girl. Do you remember, does that mean anything to you?
No.
Okay, there was...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
It would be a funny sort of sting they'd play in.
Right.
Which is a girl...
Well, and hang on, you're thinking that Bowie was influenced
no,
by
no,
that.
No, sorry, no. I'm just saying that was junior. That okay. was junior choice. But they used to play that whole genre of kids' songs.
They did. Yes.
And there's a song that I got obsessed with that I think this artist is very, very Bowie at that time.
Once upon a time there was a little white bow. Very sad because he was a little white bow.
Tommy Steele.
Yeah.
So is it? So Bowie is impersonating Tommy Steele.
Yeah, I think more than Anthony Newley.
Yeah.
Do you think so?
Yeah. I think that's an interesting theory.
I would have preferred it if you had played Stick It in Your Family album.
Because is I've that always, Tommy Steele?
Album. Yes. Yeah. I've always liked the fact that he has to say album to make that work.
It's always bottoms with you, Mr. David.
Stick It in Your Family album.
Of course,
can you play that? Because I've always liked that song.
Well, is that called Flashbang Wallop?
Flashbang Wallop, What a Picture. Well, it's not called Stick It in Your Family album. It's called Flashbang Wallop, What a Picture.
On the big bass drum. What a picture. What a picture. Run to the album. Bum, bum, bum. Stick It in Your Family album.
There we go. Thank you very much, Tommy.
Is that Lionel Bart wrote that?
I think so.
I don't know if you heard the Lionel Bart biography on Radio 4, but there's a great story about when Lionel Bart wrote Consider Yourself. He was sitting at home, wherever he lived in West London, and he wrote Consider Yourself in a day. He was so pleased with it. He was on his own. He went next door where Francis Bacon lived.
Right.
And it just sang it to him. Francis Bacon opened the door. Really? He went, wow. I've written this song. He goes, consider yourself at home. Francis Bacon went, well, it sounds really good, Lionel. It's like, I think it was Francis Bacon. It was someone like that.
I hope then, it was Francis Bacon. Because in the background, I've got one of those terrifying Pope images. Francis Bacon pictured terrible image of Pope.
I just like the idea of this poor Francis Bacon hearing this song and not knowing how to respond to it. I was really excited to this.
If you listen, I know you know this, but if you then listen to
just look through your window, look who sits outside, little me is waiting, standing through the night.
Yeah, you're right.
I mean, then and you know the ending.
Well, I might stretch it till Wednesday.
All that.
God.
There was a terrible thing in early Bowie, much as I've come through and like the music, which is the worst kind of fey sense of humour.
There's a touches of that in Todd Kooks and sort of Heart. And
Although I don't mind it by then because the songs are so brilliant, I think. Although Fill Your Heart obviously is a cover.
But there's again in that documentary, someone, I can't remember who it is, it's like it's Earl Slick, the guitarist.
Carlos Alomar says of The Laughing Gnome, that it's like Wait For Your Man, like, which, you know what? It isn't.
It definitely isn't.
There's a bit that I saw a few people think was great, where Carlos Alomar, who is one of Bowie's guitarists, plays Waiting For The Man. Waiting For My Man? No, Waiting For The Man.
Waiting For The Man,
By Velvet Underground. I'm Waiting For My Man. Right, and then he says, and if you listen or if you play the chords of Laughing Gnome, it's exactly the same. Well, A, it isn't. A, isn't. There's an extra chord. And B, Waiting For The Man is C and F.
Okay.
So there's about a million songs that are like Waiting For The Man. It's the problem with that.
But there's a bit with, I think, with Earl Slick, who basically says, one of the things about David was he was really funny. Yeah. And there, you get this, and we've talked about this a lot on this podcast. Mm. People say, oh yeah, he was all those things. But I mean, above all else, he was just funny. And you sort of think, well, apart from the fact he wasn't, that's a valid point.
Yes.
And they get the other sort of, in this interview they talk about London Boys, where he does this very Tommy Steele.
Yeah, now you're one of the London.
And Elsa goes, you know, the great thing about that, that's just Bowie bringing his voice and his London experience, you know, and his English. And you're thinking, yeah, but that's not his voice at all.
One of the things I'm doing this podcast is I was watching that documentary, and there were lots and lots of strange little bits of it that have come up on this podcast. So one of the things about this podcast is that Rob, his brother, was at a sort of student job or early job serving at this banquet. He served Bowie, and he involved saying the words coffee, roll of butter, something like that.
I'll find it.
And he said it as if, like, Bowie will get this. And Bowie
didn't get a reference.
No, he just thought he was serving him those things.
You bought some coffee, butter and bread. You can't make a thing because the meter's dead.
Yeah, but he didn't say all that. I think he just said coffee, butter and bread or
well,
something.
Well, that's not enough, is it?
Yeah. Anyway, so while I'm watching that... Yes. All this stuff is coming up, and I'm having to say to Dolly, oh, we talk about that on the podcast, and she's not very interested.
Well, the early stuff, I mean, it just isn't cool, is it? I mean, the images stuff was like this embarrassing thing.
Yes.
And you'd go, you'd flick through the rack at the record shop, knowing that you had all the Bowie albums, and you still flick through, oh, there's a new Bowie album. Oh, it's Peter and the Wolf. Do you remember that experience?
Yeah, no, of course.
Oh, it's the only one I haven't got.
But I do think...
And the images was always there as a slight embarrassment.
Do go and watch that documentary.
Yeah, I will, yeah.
It's on iPlayer. And one thing that happens in it is, of course, Rick Wakeman. Turns up on it. And, you know, I like Rick Wakeman. In fact, we have talked about possibly getting him on this podcast, so I might ruin that now.
Yeah,
but I don't think I will, because it's not a terrible thing to say about him, which is he starts playing a mellotron, which is something that they used a lot in those days. It was used on Space Oddity or whatever. And a mellotron, though, is quite small.
Right.
It's, like, not much bigger than this laptop in front of me. So it's a keyboard with quite small keys on it. Rick Wakeman's fingers are so much like sausages.
Now, or then?
No, then. I mean, now. I mean,
I think it was definitely.
They're like sausages anyway.
Then. Yeah.
But if you see them with small piano keys, they really look like Cumberland.
I saw.
I mean, as someone who posted a lot of pictures of British. British fry up.
How long have you lived in America? British fry, don't call them British fry.
English breakfast.
Yeah.
I actually looked at those.
British brunch.
Yeah. If there was a fried egg and some beans next to those fingers,
that would
I'd be salivating.
I saw Rick Wakeman play Life on Mars in December.
Wow.
In the London Library.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he did it. It was the Christmas London Library. Now, Tim Rice is the president of the London Library, where I'm a member and a sort of supporter. And he got Rick Wakeman to come and entertain the, the old duffers and the old writers like us. And first of all, he came on and he talked about Morning Has Broken, and he said, Cat Stevens rang me up and he said, I want to do Morning Has Broken. So we ripped the page out of the Boys Brigade hymn book, and I played it, and it was like 50 seconds long. And he said, well, do a bit of twiddly bit at the beginning. So so Rick Wakeman did that whole did the whole thing at the beginning of Morning Broken, and they timed it. It was like 1:30 or something. We'll do it at the end again. So it was like, we can do it in the middle as well. And then he just sat down and played Morning Has Broken, and we were all transported back to our 1970s school assemblies.
Amazing.
And Mrs. Johnson's piano finger playing.
So Cat Stevens' version of Morning Has Broken is basically just Morning Has Broken, one verse.
With Rick Wakeman doing all the improv.
A lot of padding, not just on his sausagey fingers.
Rick Wakeman came up with that sort of whole riff that he does in that song. But he said the same about Life on Mars. He said that David just said, do what you want to do with your piano player. And he said he was a very giving and generous collaborator. Yeah. And he would let people...
Yeah.
He would let, what, so I've just ruined the two best Rick Wakeman stories. If you do have him on, I've just told them
no,
both.
No, no, Rick will have some other stories, almost definitely.
Once we've got past the Cumberland sausage thing.
Yeah. I think he'll be all right with the sausagey fingers.
I think it's
worse, they're still very good at playing the piano.
I think
sausage-y
it's worse that
you've
specified the actual type of sausage. I think that's what would do it.
It's only the only type of sausage I can think of.
Well, that actually wouldn't be Cumberland. Because Cumberland are curled, unless you're saying he's got weird
curled
fingers.
But what other type of sausages are there? Because now I'm reduced to saying
Lincolnshire.
98% meat.
I'm really sorry. It's not Cumberland. It's Lincolnshire, Rick. So
go and have a look at it, though. Really, they look unbelievably like sausages.
School assembly. You're saying school assembly. I don't know if I've said this before. My headmaster, Mr. Clark, who we nicknamed Clactopus.
Clactopus.
Yes. Just out of interest.
As in Clark and octopus.
It was
an actual character.
I think that would have been the reference, but he didn't look like
him. He didn't look like
he didn't have a duck's bill and lay eggs.
He did. But that's, it was quite appropriate.
No,
now,
weirdly,
I think
he was a mammal.
But also,
that's why they called him that. I knew there was something. But he actually reminds me of when I think about him, I think about the teacher in The Wall. in the Gerald Scarfe, Pink Floyd thing.
Yeah, tall, another brick in the wall.
Thin, quite Victorian, actually. Right. He used to tell us how to handwrite. It was really I just remember him playing some classical music to us, just listening and
having to listen. Clactopus
is doing his classical, type 5, Clactopus is classical. and he's playing, I'm going to say Beethoven, because I don't know what it was. And then he holds the album up, the sort of vinyl, and sort of says, "So everyone, who is this?" And it's nobody knows. I went to
Composer.
Yeah, it's, let's say it's Beethoven. It's like a picture of Beethoven. Yeah. So he's holding it up and says, "Who is this?" And I put my hand up and I said, "Mick Jagger," which felt like...
Is that as a joke?
As a joke, and it felt like incredibly subversive, and it got a massive laugh.
Oh, fantastic.
And then I got into a lot of trouble, and I think I got a detention... You know, I certainly went to his office, and it was all, you know... And I suppose I think about that. That's so quaint, isn't it? That Mick Jagger would be a subversive thing to say. Would it be like 1977? Yeah. It wasn't even peak Mick Jagger. It would be like 1978 or something.
And it took you this long to become to become a comedy performer again.
I guess it's when I found I could make people laugh that I decided not to become a comedian at all.
I wanted to say something about that. Well, it does remind me of a story, which is that Norris McWhirter came to us. Do you know the story? You know the story, but you don't know it.
I don't know.
Norris McWhirter.
Is he the IRA?
Ross.
That was his brother Ross. Yeah. But listeners of a certain age will know him from Record Breakers, a show that Roy Castle used to do, which was about the Guinness Book of Records. And that's how most people knew him. Most people didn't know that Norris McWhirter and Ross McWhirter were part of this very right wing
association
called the Freedom Association. I didn't know that. Yeah. So he turns up at our school to do a talk. We occasionally had people come and do talks.
I actually didn't know they both were, actually. I knew Ross was, so I didn't know they both were.
And you thought it was going to be about...
Well, everyone thought... It was a boys' school in 1976.
Yeah.
Everyone thinks, brilliant, the bloke from Record Breakers is here, right?
Tap dance
so
really
it's packed with people expecting it's all going to be Guinness Book of Records, whatever. Yeah. You know, here's the biggest fish in the world, whatever. Boys, especially in the 70s, boys really like the Guinness Book of Records. Yeah, yeah. It's like, it's a real thing. So he comes. He does
24 taps per second. Yeah, that's what
he does. He does an incredibly serious, very right-wing speech about creeping unionisation, about
communism,
Reds under the bed, about how apartheid was a good thing. I mean, unbelievably boring and very right-wing speech, no mention of Records at all. And then here's the part of the story. Towards the end of it, I thought, he's going to ask for questions, isn't he, at the end of this? And I got slightly worried. I thought, people didn't put their hand up and say, what's the biggest fish, aren't they? That's what they're going to say. Or whatever, that's going to be really embarrassing. And weirdly, as an urban myth, I have seen it reported that that is what happens.
I've
seen people say that's what happened, right? A woman called Marina Hyde, a very good journalist, has reported that's what happened, right? That isn't what happened.
At your school,
at my school, she doesn't call it my school, she doesn't know. That is not what happened, right? He did call for questions, and a boy put his hand up and said, what will houses look like in the year 2000? absolutely loved about it was, it's nothing to do with what he's talking about. Record breakers. And he answers it.
What did he say?
He says, I think by then we'll all be living in some kind of yurt.
Really? But maybe he went around and did those talks at lots of different schools, and if you're not in that story that Marina Hyde reported on, maybe at some school somebody did go,
That's possibly true. I don't know. Anyway, the thing I was going to say was, to get it back to rock music, is something that's often bothered me is in Another Brick in the Wall, which I remember very well when it came out.
Yeah.
I was a big Pink Floyd fan as well. They've got... Is it a Scottish guy sort of playing the school teacher?
Wrong, do it again. Oh. That guy.
Yeah, now
you've just answered it. Oh. You've just fucking answered it. Which is, all my life, I have not known what he says before, do it again.
Ron.
I think it's wrong. Do it again. It's not wrong. Yeah. Do it again. He's not speaking to a child called
Ron. I've always heard wrong.
Would you want to play it?
The other thing, I will. And the other thing that he says, which he gets really wound up about, is how can you have your meat when you haven't... how can you have your pudding when you haven't had your meat? Yeah. And he gets really upset about
that. Sorry, John, what were you going to
say? I was going to say, whenever that came out, I was probably 17.
1980,
18. Yeah. I lived in this house, and my room was on the top floor, and my mum would have to come out of the front of the... into the garden and shout up, John, if there's phone for me, or every time that record played, and I'd go to the window to see who'd come, which my friends had come around, or who was phoned, but it was always the Scottish guy on.
But is it wrong? Do it again? Because it sounds so weird.
Is it at the very beginning, isn't it? Is that right? I can't remember.
Let's try it.
I think it's at the very beginning. beginning.
By the way, I mean, I like this song sort of, although I sort of went off the Pink Floyd round about the wall. But yeah, isn't it the most bloody immature?
And it's wrong.
Sort of sixth form rebellious.
Yeah. It's absolutely wrong. We do need education.
We
it's
do
really
need
annoying.
Education. Yes. Yeah. No dark sarcasm in the classroom.
Well,
no,
we don't need bad education, is what they're saying. We don't need bad sarcastic teachers.
I know, but the lyrics.
I went to see
so...
Lily Allen with my daughter in the Hammersmith Odeon when she was like when my daughter was like 10, and she was going, "This is for all the people who put you down, policemen and teachers." Mm. And I heckled Lily Allen. I was going, "Teachers are great." Because I was chair of governors at a local school. It's like, don't slag off teachers, but she'd been to like a dozen different schools. And
to be fair to the young people, John,
yes,
I think we have to allow them their rebelliousness. And that might include seeing teachers as someone they need to rebel against.
You could have said the vast majority.
The vast majority. The point is, Lily Allen,
you know, I mean, she's a bit older, whatever, but she's like in her 20s or whatever. It's kind of allowable. Pink Floyd, by the time they released they were like in their mid-30s.
Yes.
I know. And it is an immature posture.
It's an immature thing, but nonetheless, what does the Scottish
We are basically
say?
The male to Pink Floyd's, aren't we? We're basically saying it's immature and unacceptable.
No, we're taking a left-wing position. We're in favour of state school
teachers.
By
the way, are they boys or girls? Look at their hair. So I think at the beginning is the thing you struggle with.
Let's see if we can hear it.
But let's
I wonder who the actor was as well. Right, I am right, actually.
You think it's not wrong?
I think it's just a sort of exclamation.
Oh, no. It's John, your friend's here.
Wait, I don't think it's wrong. You think that's wrong?
Wrong, do it again. That makes perfect sense.
That makes sense, but I think you might have imposed that.
I don't know.
Bella, what do you think, Bella?
I think it's wrong.
Okay. Yeah, do it again.
I was going out with a girl at the time back in Berkshire whose dad said, used to sing, "We don't need no education. You can tell it from our accents." He thought that was hilarious. I remember thinking at the time, well, that's pretty snobby.
Can I say, is there a suspicion that you feel a bit of empathy towards the headmaster here? In this bit, which is, you can't have your pudding if you... How can you have your pudding if you don't eat meat? Then he genuinely seems to have a struggle with it and says it again, if I remember rightly, that he's really... It's impassioned.
What? You can't have your pudding if you don't
eat
meat.
So, in other words, he's not doing it maliciously. He genuinely doesn't understand.
Also, there is a good... There's a point you've raised there as well, which is the whole song is saying these people are totally unfair, they're awful people, they make our lives a misery.
Yes.
All he's saying is, I think it would be healthier for you not to just eat pudding.
I mean,
certainly better to have a balanced diet. I mean,
that's
fair
what
enough.
He's shouting, have a balanced diet. Listen, I think he genuinely gets upset. It's the second one. I think that's pain.
The
I think
actor's
that's...
been told to really think about
Listen
it.
Listen to the second one. I think that's pain.
It's ridiculous.
I think he's
genuinely.
I don't think he means to be harmful. He's like, how does that happen?
And that's as political as they get, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really? That is that's their protest song.
He's always saying, help me. If you can explain, I'll let you do it. I just don't get how that can happen. I think he's open.
And there was something else I wanted to say, which is just a bit of trivia, which you probably know the answer to, which is, who is the also Scottish voice on Dark Side of the Moon, the engineer who says, I think it's before the great gig in the sky, he says, "Well, my friend died. Any time will do."
So I thought these were people that they literally outside the studio milling around.
No, it's an engineer, but there's something about him.
Gus he's Dudgeon. Gordon Brown.
No.
It's
Naomi Watts' dad.
Okay.
we were so going to guess
the small cousin.
Not
the small cousin. If Naomi Watts' dad is having to do that, imagine what it's like.
I was talking to Naomi Watts' dad. He's on the album, actually.
If he has to be an engineer, imagine what other people have to go through.
See you next week. Thank you very much, John.
Thank you for having me on.
We've had a lovely time.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.